This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Carbox Hampadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Right, the Texans lose last night 34-20 to the Kansas City Chiefs. And now you got to sit for 10 days. Seth, would you rather, as a player, coming off of that loss in week one, knowing the Ravens are coming up in the next game, would you rather have this 10-day window here to get ready for it, or would you rather just have a normal week so you don't have to stew on it for an extra 3 days?
I'd rather have a Thursday night game. If I got my ass kicked on a Sunday, please let me play another game as soon as possible. Not just to get the taste out of your mouth, but also in a short week like that, you don't even usually watch film of the previous game.
So part of it's ego.
You come in Monday and they're like, all right, here are the corrections, here's the bad plays, this is what we got to fix, let's go, we're on to Cincinnati.
I've never heard a former player say that before, so that's really funny, though. So when you have a bad Sunday game before a Thursday game, it's actually a good thing because you don't have to sit there and get torn up in the film room by your coaches.
Yeah, like it's almost – and you can see the disappointment in the coaches' faces that they don't get to really have a good long go at you.
Seth, when you were a player, texting wasn't nearly as big a thing as it is now. I feel like there's a 24-hour-a-day opportunity for coaches to still heckle their players if they want to. You know, like on that short week, yeah, I can't tear up Brandon Dunn in film, but I can sit here and send him texts about how terrible he was in the game on Sunday.
Or I could send him a GIF, a GIF of your missed tackles. Hey, I had one of the interns do a montage of all your missed tackles.
Like a GIF of some hippo slipping at the zoo and falling down on his side and rolling around or something like that.
That has like the way they watch and distribute film and clips and cut-ups and everything has just gotten so advanced compared to – like it wasn't that long. Sean, I swear to you, it wasn't that long ago we were watching film on beta.
Yeah.
Beta.
Yeah.
That was what – it was beta. It was a better quality videotape, so we watched film on beta. And we went digital in like 2005 or so. And now they can – yeah, now they can pull up all your worst play. They can do a James Harden highlight reel with, like, you know, one text to the video intern, and then, boom, it's emailed into your inbox.
At any point in your career, going all the way back to Pop Warner, did you watch film on reel-to-reel?
No.
Okay,
no,
just
no,
checking.
No.
Just checking.
We never had that.
We used reel-to-reel when I was in elementary school, not to watch film of football. We used it to watch, you know, animals in the wild and things like that. You know, we actually –
oh, that's right. No,
projector.
I remember that.
Yeah, the reel-to-reel.
Yeah, they
projector.
Would bring it in. That's –
and the film would whip itself after it ran out, that kind of thing.
Sometimes it would melt. That's right.
Yeah.
Boy, I completely forgot that part of my childhood.
Seth, microfiche.
Let's just talk about this for the rest of the show.
Seriously?
Instead of whatever that abomination was
so
we saw last night.
Now,
I will say this, Sean. There is something to be said. One of the old cliches in football is always, hey, it's never as good as you thought. It's never as bad as you thought. After a good game, you think like, oh, wow, we were perfect last night. And you go in and you watch it on film. You think, oh, crap. After a bad game, you thought nothing went right. You go in. And, you know, honestly, after a game like this, there's some things that guys got to be coached pretty hard on because it's the basic fundamentals. There are other things that are either mental errors or not quite executing the scheme properly that can be fine-tuned. I don't think the Texans are close to beating – I don't think it's like they're going to be close to beating the Chiefs 9 times out of 10 anytime soon. But with a few simple changes, they could have been more competitive in that game. They lack the horses defensively to do a whole lot about that Kansas City offense. But a lot of that was okay, poor tackling. The defense, they gotta get a little bit crisper on the front seven and understanding where they fit when they're doing some of the more exotic stuff. In the defensive backfield, as long as Lonnie Johnson can prove that he's out there and worth being out there, I think that he's hopefully going to be better than Vernon Hargraves, who played as the starter in the first half. So I'm not completely despondent at this point. But they gotta clean some fundamental stuff up super fast.
What's the biggest concern coming out of that game? In other words, Seth, if we were overreacting here on the show this morning and we were saying this scares us, that scares us, which would actually be the most valid thing that would be scaring us that we talk about?
I'll give you three things, and I realized this morning I've been focusing more on the defense because that's where my eyes tend to go. Defensively, that pass rush is still an issue. And I don't think that Chiefs offensive line is actually all that impressive. I think
missing two guys from last year.
Yeah, I think the interior offensive line could have been had. I think Mitchell Schwartz is good, but man, Jacob Martin, good job. Good job by Jacob Martin early on there.
He did. What did you think, real quick, I know you got two more. What did you think of them lining J.J. Watt up at nose tackle a bunch in the first half?
I like that, depending on what they're doing with it. You know, they're not asking J.J. to be a two-gapping Vince Wilfork type of nose tackle there. That's all part of getting speed on the inside and creating some mismatches. And I think also they, you know, early on especially, they had some packages where they only had one big defensive lineman on the field. They wanted as much speed, as many linebackers out there as possible. Even in nickel, they were lighter than normal nickel because they were replacing some of those defensive linemen with outside linebackers. So, that's just what they were going for because they wanted to limit the pass, and then the run was killing them, so they had to go a little bit heavier. Those guys got to play better physically.
What are your other two things?
Offensive line.
That are concerns.
Offensive line, just because, like I said yesterday, I think that the two rookies from last year, I think Sharping and Titus Howard, can potentially be very good offensive linemen, but we need to remember that they weren't actually good last year. They had promising starts as rookies, but that's not the same as being a good veteran player. So my question would be, how quickly are they going to get it? I think opening night last night, for some of the issues, I think they still looked way better than they did when they got their shots last year. Sharping didn't start in week one, but when Sharping started to get an opportunity, I think they're definitely better and further along than a lot of second-year guys, but they have to get better. And the third one is simply Randall Cobb, that last night's game plan by the Chiefs defensively was specifically to limit the deep ball. Bill O'Brien's plan as general manager was to create a selection of receivers to where you had answers for whatever the defense tried to do. So if the Kansas City defense tries to take away the deep ball and tries to limit your super fast guys on the outside, that should open up a wealth of opportunities for Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb didn't get a target until the game was well out of hand. Randall Cobb, when I watched him, and I didn't watch him that closely because he never showed up, but when I thought consciously, all right, let me watch Randall Cobb on this play, I didn't see a whole lot of urgency or athleticism out of him. So I don't know what the hell's going on with Randall Cobb. Maybe he's banged up or something, but they've got to – if they want to justify paying him $9 million a year and giving Deshaun Watson a slot receiver, this is supposed to be part of that speed attack that Deshaun's never had before, they got to get Randall Cobb involved.
I get some text messages from people. Hey, you guys taking phone calls? I want to sound off. We're angry about this. 713-572-4640. Let's mix a phone call in here. Billy wants in to talk a little Texans. Billy, welcome into the show. How are you?
I'm all right. But this 4 years in the offense for Watson, I don't blame him specifically, but where is the urgency in the offense? And I don't mean just in the fourth quarter when they're down and the game's over. Why don't they pick up the offense and go up tempo or no huddle? Or why don't they spread out defenses and then run the ball instead of trying to run the ball against 8 or 9 man fronts? I'm so tired of, well, we got to establish the run. We need to establish the run. I understand they need to run sometimes to protect Watson, but how many times have we watched the team get marched up and down the field by Brady or Rodgers or whoever? They get us in a personnel group they like, and they go up tempo or no huddle or whatever. But we don't ever do that to other teams. But this is supposed to be the daunted New England offense, but we never do that. Where is the urgency?
I agree with you. And I think the unfortunate answer is that they're not good at it. And again, this is what a Bill O'Brien offense looks like. They always look a little clunky. They always look like they don't operate well. They make mental errors if they don't. I mean, they can't get the snap count figured out.
I mean, how many? There's 16,000 fans in the stadium. How are you messing up that snap count? Can we start with getting the snap count correct? Yeah. They look like discombobulated fools out there at times. And this is what Bill O'Brien offenses look like. We'll say it again. He's never been in the top half of DVOA for offenses since he's been here.
Ever.
It's going on the seventh season. Did we see anything last night that makes us feel like they're capable of doing that? So when you run up-tempo in the NFL, the risk you run is that it's like driving a car really fast. When you make a mistake, it can be costly, and it's easier to make mistakes when you're driving a car really fast. So you got to be really good at what you do. You got to really be nailed down and competent, and they've just never run like a competent offense. So I guess it's not a satisfying answer I'll give for that. I think that Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly want to operate with tempo at times. They're just flat out not good at it. And is it coaching? Is it Deshaun? I don't know, but man, I'd sure love to see it show up. And then Sean, as you've pointed out, not even up tempo, but how about getting a playoff as the quarter is expiring every now and then? You know, like how about it not even up tempo, but just some sense of, well, we really only have a few plays left before the end of the half. And I'm going back to last year now. It's very, very frustrating. I have no answer that's going to make you feel better other than to say, oh, look, I think they want to go faster. They're just thinking, it's like Seth, I want to run myself. I'm speaking to myself in the third person. I'd love to run a 4.640. I cannot do it.
Right.
Yeah, the Texans cannot do the up-tempo offense.
That's a little scary. If you're comparing the Texans offense to you trying to run a 4.640, then all no offense, Seth, all hope is lost.
Especially in my current state, Sean.
Deceptively fast.
Sean, I had to mute myself during the pregame show yesterday because I injured my knee bending it because I was sitting down, and that's what it feels like.
Oh, that's okay. That's not something you need to do very often. You know, bending your knee. That's
while you're seated.
Right. That's a very unnatural thing that you've got to do there. Bending your knee while you're sitting down. All right. There were several turning points in last night's game, and unfortunately, most of them came early. A decision by Bill O'Brien that Seth and I disagree on, and then a sequence at the end of the half that was really just curtains for the Texans at that point. We will go back through and do the autopsy of last night's 34-20 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. You're listening to a Football Friday edition of Payne and Pendergast, presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA on Sports Radio 610.
From the Twin Peaks studio, it's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610, presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, 713-572-4610 if you want to get in. We'll drop some of you in if you want to sound off on the Texans losing to the Chiefs last night. Want to lay out a few of the turning points in the game, Seth. There were some turning points, and unfortunately, the turning points came early in the game. You would like them for at least come in the second half because it meant that the game would have still been competitive in the second half, and this was not. But let's just relive some of these here. And actually, the first one for me includes something that you and I disagreed on a little bit earlier. Bill O'Brien, and actually, let's get a little mood music underneath this. I need a little more pep in my step for going through some of these. All right, turning points in the game last night. Early on, take it down a tiny bit. There you go. All right. Early on in the game, there was a situation. The game is tied at 7. Chiefs had just driven down the field to get a touchdown. Tied the game at 7. Texans had the ball. They drove the ball to midfield. Had the ball 4th and 4 at the 50-yard line. My feeling was in that situation that you got to know that your defense is not going to stand up to the Chiefs long-term in this game. And you've got to do some high variance, not irresponsible things, like fake punting in your own territory in a playoff game. But more, you know, high variance, 4th and 4, it's a makeable 4th down, it's at midfield, you're not leaving the ball in field goal range, you're leaving the ball at midfield. I thought they should have gone for it there. Bill O'Brien asked about it after the game, here's what he had to say.
I think one of them was 4th and 10, and the other one was, if I'm correct, was more than 4th and, I mean, it was the other one, I think they were both long yardage 4th downs, so. If we got a little bit more, we were definitely going for it on 4th down 2 or 3 times tonight, but we just didn't get enough. You know, 4th and 9, 4th and 10, you know, we just felt like that was the best decision.
It's actually 4th and 4, the one I'm talking about. Seth, you disagree with me. You thought the decision to punt there was a good decision.
I think at that point in the game, that was before that mega drive by the Chiefs, right?
The mega drive came after the punt.
At that point, the Texans had gone three and out, and then they had a 9-play touchdown drive. So I think that in the Texans' defensive strategy of playing deep, cover two, don't give up the deep stuff. If the Chiefs kill us with the run, then so be it. But, you know, it was almost like – in some ways, it was almost like some teams played defense in the Big 12 where you're like, all right, look, they're going to get their yardage, but we're going to play good red zone defense. Yeah. So that's what we'll do. Maybe the Chiefs will mess up and his play will stall out or we'll get a sack or something. But at the very least, we're going to play good red zone defense. And I think that that was a reasonable strategy. I don't really have a problem with Bill O'Brien's overall strategy going into that game. When it comes to going for it on 4th and 4 at midfield, I'll give Bill O'Brien credit again, yet again. If you're just tuning in this morning, don't worry. I've been plenty mean to Bill O'Brien.
Yes.
But probably maybe a little too mean. But I've actually put him on trial, basically. So I will say, Bill O'Brien last year was one of the most aggressive fourth down coaches in the league.
He was.
And his analytics people study this stuff. And I think that given where they were in the game, given the situation, given that it was 4th and 4 at midfield, I think you relied on the math at that point,
yeah,
which is way smarter than feeling like, oh crap, it's Andy Reid. I got to give me some points. Go give me some points with some kind of fake Deshaun. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, Seth, what I will concede to you, while you and I disagree on this, it would have definitely been one of those decisions where if they convert, then everybody's gushing about it. And if they don't convert, then it gets compared to the fake punt in the playoff game. There's no question
right
about that. I just thought, knowing who's on the other side, knowing that it's Mahomes going against this defense, I think it was justifiable to go for it there. So
the fake punt in the playoffs game, the big issue with that was that he had erred on the side of caution in going for the field goal down in the red zone earlier. That's where you felt like, okay, now you're just stacking a desperate decision to try to make up for a less bad decision.
That's a great point. He felt like he was grab bagging. He was flinching at that point in that game, no question. The next big turning point for me, and keep in mind, it's 14-7. You've driven into field goal range at that point. Kaimi Fairbairn, who, by the way, is the third highest paid kicker in football now. He's another one that flies under the radar, Seth, as somebody who got a nearly market resetting deal, who's never made a Pro Bowl before. Kaimi Fairbairn is getting paid to make 51-yard field goals at the end of the half in games like this. And he just, it did off his foot, it didn't even look good. He was wide right on that field goal. The problem for this is it left time on the clock, even just 30 seconds, but it left time on the clock and really good field position for Patrick Mahomes. Let's relive the magic of the Kaimi missed field goal.
51-yard field goal attempt. Kaimi Fairbairn, Weeks with the snap, Anger with the hold, right hash mark spot. The kick is up, and it's no good.
It's no good. It left the Chiefs near midfield. They drive down. They get 3 points. The Texans are frankly lucky the Chiefs didn't get 7 points before the half. They very well easily could have. Seth, what's that like going into the locker room on a note like that, where it's just, that's literally a 6-point swing? He kicks the ball 3 yards the other way to the left and puts it inside the goalpost. Then you're talking about being down 14-10 going into the half. Chiefs get the ball to start the second half. Now you're talking about going into the half down 10, and the Chiefs get the ball with a chance to go up 17, which eventually they did.
Well, I guess the biggest thing is that it all happens so fast.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens on the tail end of that super long drive, or very close to that super long drive. So you're kind of gassed. You get out there. It was I don't want to make excuses for them, but Zach Cunningham got two calls on that easily could not have been calls. They didn't ever show a rerun. They never showed a replay of the Zach Cunningham illegal contact, did they?
They did not.
I went back and tried to watch it in real time, and you could see where he'd make contact with the receiver, maybe 7 yards past the line of scrimmage. it is a legitimate call, but it easily could have not been called.
Yeah.
And then likewise with the horse collar, I know that by the letter of the law, if you pull the ball carrier down by the nameplate, that's a horse collar. I just don't think I've ever actually seen that called a horse collar before.
Yeah.
You go look into that. I think the official thought he saw Zach Cunningham have his hand inside the collar of the ball carrier. So those two penalties kind of screwed the Texans at that point. But also, look, Andy Reid's an aggressive coach, and that's a risk you run when you give him 30 seconds.
All right, so 17-7 going into the half. The Chiefs get the ball to start the second half. When the Chiefs get the ball to start the second half and you're down 10, it feels like you're down 30. and rightfully so, because here was the kill shot from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the superb rookie running back out of LSU.
On second down, here's a nice move inside 20. Edwards-Helaire, 15, 10, 5, and he's in. Touchdown. Seth, the rookie scores.
Yeah, Seth, you really got a flavor on that play in particular as to why this guy was a back end of the first round pick, as opposed to a rookie running back that you pluck in the third or fourth round, plug him into this offense, and he does great things because he's got all these incredible pieces around him. This is a stocky little dude who's strong but fast. He was pulling away from guys on that run.
Yeah, and I think the most demoralizing thing about that drive, and this is probably the ugliest drive of the game in a lot of respects, even longer than that long one. Sean, there wasn't a single third down on that drive.
Yeah.
There was no part where you say, like, oh, man, if the Texans could have just – if they could have just done this or if they could have just done that. That was eight plays, and it was never worse than second and 13 after that false start that they'd had.
That's – okay, I'm glad you brought that up. I said this to Clint while we were watching the game, and I brought it up in the postgame show. And I think this is part of why the whole first half – there wasn't necessarily a demoralizing moment in the first half, but the whole first half just felt like it had this cloud of demoralization over it. Because I got to go back and look later on today. Seth, it felt like the Chiefs were in second and three the entire first half. Every single series of downs, Anthony Weaver's scheme was giving them 6 or 7 yards and they were taking it. And so that's a problem. That's a problem because Patrick Mahomes can use the entire field even when it's second and 15. If you are giving a team with Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, second and three and second and two the entire time, there's not a play that they can't run in those situations.
They can run literally anything. This is where it comes down to, again, I'm okay with the strategy and the scheme. And I don't, you know, I think it was Anthony Weaver in combination with Bill O'Brien deciding that, look, this will be a bend but don't break scenario. It's not always going to be like this, but for the Chiefs, it's going to be bend but don't break. That's where the poor tackling was absolutely lethal. Sean, you're exactly right. That 16-play touchdown drive,
yeah.
These are the third downs that the Chiefs had to convert in that 16-play drive. A third and one, a third and three,
yeah.
A third and goal.
Yeah.
That was it. And that third and goal was at the Houston 2. Like, it was just – that was maybe one of the most brilliantly executed, picture-perfect, well-executed touchdown drives I've ever seen. And it wasn't just because the Kansas City Chiefs are so good. It's because, man, the defensive line was getting beat physically up front. The linebackers were abysmal in their tackling. And I'll give the linebackers and the safeties a little bit of a break because – it's a lot harder to tackle in the open field when guys aren't slowed down at all at the line of scrimmage. So there was such poor fundamental football being played there. I'll include the defensive backs in the run support in all of that. I'll say that Vernon Hargraves was really bad coming up and making plays. When you're playing cover two as a cornerback, you concede the 5-yard throws, but you got to get up there and tackle. That was just a masterpiece by the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And a masterpiece because the Texans helped them out.
That whole drive, their two touchdown drives in the first half, the drive to tie it up at 7 and the drive to take the lead, second and 3, third and 2, fourth and 1. Then they get four first downs in a row, four plays in a row, Seth, where they just got first downs, just chunks. They went a 15-yard pass to Travis Kelce, the 10-yard pass to Sammy Watkins, 18-yard pass to a run from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So they were eating up big chunks, and when they weren't eating up big chunks, they were in second and third and short situations. And then on the touchdown drive to make it 14-7, second and 5, third and 1, second and 4, another couple series of downs where they didn't even need a second or third down. They're just getting big chunks. They get an offsides from J.J. Watt, who jumped the center trying to predict the snap count. Second and 2. Second and 6, third and 3. They're never behind the chains in that game. The only time they were behind the chains, it felt like, in that game was when Jacob Martin got the sack on the first series and they were able to actually get off the field that time. But boy, the defense just got torn up last night, man.
Somebody on the text line says that's Zoom football for you.
Messing with the Zoom.
But it's a valid point, and this is the problem. It would be great. Oh, gosh. I would have loved if the Chiefs had been missing a bunch of tackles, because then I could very easily say, well, look, we've never had a preseason where you didn't face any competition other than your own the entire time. You know, there's no live tackling. You're not seeing anybody else. But the problem is the Chiefs, as I recall, tackled pretty well in that game.
The
Texans' tackling was really, really poor. They need to fix that immediately. Somebody wanted to ask me, too, if the problem on defense seemed like a personnel problem or the new defensive coordinator. I think Anthony Weaver and Bill O'Brien's strategy was a sound one, and it made sense. I think you just have to execute it better. Now, part of that's, guys, can they physically do it? Look, Brandon Dunn's not as good as DJ Reader. That's just the sum total of the situation there. And he's not going to do as well in there as DJ Reader. But then, look, Zach Cunningham and Bernardrick McKinney are better tacklers than they showed last night. That's not on Anthony Weaver. Vernon Hargraves, not a very good cornerback. He's just not a good player. So that one's on Bill O'Brien. Yeah. So my answer would be, I think Weaver had the right idea with his scheme. He might have bitten off more than he chewed in how exotic he tried to get, because guys didn't execute it real well. And that's something where, let's see what happens this next week. Let's see how the execution is. At the very least, let's not miss tackles. Let's see how guys do when they're playing the scheme with actually sound technique.
Let's drop a phone call in here. Wayne wants in, talk about the Texans. Wayne, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. How are you?
Hey, man, how y'all doing? I'm good, I guess.
Yeah, well, good as can be, right, Wayne?
Yeah, I started to hang up because y'all just touched on what I was going to ask. I just got with you guys, and I was going to ask you the same thing. The scheme I thought was good. The individual effort on defense was what I thought the problem was with.
Yeah, and I guess because I'm trying to be balanced about this. You guys know I played with Anthony Weaver, and unfortunately, this is the part about being a radio host where sometimes at various points along the way I have to abandon friendships. So, I'll give full disclosure on that. I'm going to be as critical of Anthony Weaver as I can when I see fit. If I were to give an even-handed assessment of it, I think that much like when Vrabel took over for the first time, there are a lot of things you want to accomplish when it's your defense for the first time. And I think both Vrabel and Weaver are a little bit more exotically oriented. They want to try things that are a little bit more creative and innovative. Not that Romeo Crennel never did that stuff, but they do. So when you try to get guys to execute that, you got to figure out how much they can bite off. Like, how much can they chew and how much can they handle? And then you also have to give an honest assessment of the guys you have in your scheme. I think some of the mistakes last night, and we'll see if they were mistakes or not, but like Vernon Hargraves playing in the capacity he played in the first half was not good. That did not work out well at all. Lonnie Johnson, I'll have to go back and watch Lonnie Johnson specifically when he played in the second half. The Chiefs were in a different mode by that point, but we'll see how much, you know, if Lonnie Johnson ends up taking over for Vernon Hargraves. And then along the defensive front, the risky maneuver they did was playing a whole bunch of lighter guys up front as defensive linemen. You know, you saw times Brennan Scarlett lined up over the center, over the guard in the A-gap. I like the theory of what they're doing there, but I don't know if they're as good at executing it yet as teams like the Baltimore Ravens are when they do it. So it's not as much of the scheme as getting those guys to execute it. That's where I stand with the defense right now.
How much of what happened last night in Kansas City can be blamed on the lack of a preseason, and are players allowed to blame it on the lack of a preseason? A little bit of audio that we will play to that effect. We'll do that next on a Football Friday presented by Carbox Hoppadillo IPA, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.